raise the question, how exactly do we believe what we believe and then operate in even the most just systems in this world, which are about getting what you deserve, earning what you deserve, and giving others what they deserve and not what they don't deserve? I mean, that just makes sense. What I'm trying to say is we're in pretty good shape if we're the elder son. If everyone were elder sons, the world would be a better place, right? Everyone would show up, everyone would do their job, everyone would be rewarded, but we're not called to be that. We're called to drop all that and participate in grace. So that's the chart. I'm thinking about grace as a lake. You inspired me because I knew I was coming here, but I didn't know it would be this good that we'd be sitting right here. So I don't know. I'm just playing with this water image. So if grace is about God gracing us with the capacity to kind of participate in everything God has, to swim in that water, right? Question is, how do you get into that water and stay there? So I don't know. Maybe this doesn't work because nobody wants to get into the lake. But you kind of have to just work with me. It's kind of trying to use a little imagination here. I mean, maybe we think about a baptismal font. You know, and I'm Presbyterian now, but it might be that Baptist influence of my dad. I kind of like immersion. Don't tell anyone at Austin Seminary. Don't send them the tape, you know, because it's, you know, out of my contract or whatever. But just kidding. But I mean, into that water. So in the water of baptism, right? We're plunged into the water. We die to our old selves, right? And this is true, by the way, all kidding aside, for Presbyterians too, even when we just put a little drop of moisture on the baby's forehead. The symbolism is supposed to be the same, right? But we get into that water, and in that water, you know what we do? We die with Christ. So this is mapped over the idea that God in Christ emptied God's self and was found in human likeness, Philippians 2. And being found in human likeness, he became obedient unto death, even death on the cross. Kenosis for the scholars among you. Self-emptying of God into that water. We die with Christ to our old selves. Not, this is the melting and the molding, not just the tweaking. Tweak me, improve me, make me a better person so I can be more effective in the world. Those aren't the words, right? It's melt, mold, fill me, use me, new creation. But we come down into that water. We die to self and we rise up as new creation, right? Resurrection with Christ, our Savior. Rise up to new life out of that water of baptism. That's the imagery. Die to self. Rise up to new life. Baptism isn't just sort of a nice thing we do with kids. It's death and life. Not life and death, but death and life. Die to self, rise up to new life. So this is the question. How do we who rise up in new life into new life, how do we continue swimming in the water, metaphorically speaking, the water of grace? Because I don't know about you, but I find myself all too often 8 feet from the edge of the swimming pool or the lake, right? Completely dry. And I think, when did I get out? Oh, man, when did I get out of that water? When did I forget my baptism? I'm using different language just to kind of find different ways into this. When did I lose my first love? When did I start thinking again about being tweaked and improved instead of being made into a new creation, conformed to the image of the Son, the biblical images? When did I start again thinking of myself kind of at a distance from God? Well, God, you've done so much for me. The least I could do is do a little more for you, right? You see? God's there. I'm here, right? God's done so much. I think I'll write God a few thank you notes. Thank you, God, for doing that for me, right? Rather than stepping into the household knowing I'm surrounded by God, right? Included by God. I don't understand this, but I know what it's about. Jesus said, abide in me and I in you. Now, how do I abide? How do I stay in the water? So that, as Jesus says in 15, abide in me and I in you, and from there you bring forth fruit in the context of swimming in that grace. Does this question make sense? I'm saying even those of us who have tasted of that communion, somehow have trouble staying there. Right? Some of us have more trouble than others. We get up out of the water, right, and have to figure out how to get back in again. You know, come to Epworth, right? We go to worship. We take walks on the beach. Those are some answers to that question, some real answers. But I just wanted to, let's see, I do have a few more minutes, right? I could talk about 10 more minutes, and then we could have some discussion. Could we go to 11:15 total time? Is that okay? But we'll end by then. And if you need to leave sooner, go ahead and leave. I'll stop talking in 10 minutes, and we'll talk 12. If you look at your chart, I just want to think about this. So now let me just use a swimming pool instead of the lake, because you all know the nuances of the lake better than I do. And I notice there aren't a lot of people jumping into it, but I think it's cold. So let's just think of, I'll use what I always think of, the Babylon Town Pool. The reason I'm back in New York. I'm a kid. And I am at swimming lessons. It's the first week of summer. My mother, who never learned to swim, was completely paranoid that we were all going to drown and that she wouldn't be able to do anything. So we had swimming lessons, so many swimming lessons. I'm a good swimmer now, consequently, so that's good. But I don't know why they had to have them at 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, in New York. It's not Texas, you know what I'm saying? It's cold. So it's like here, 7 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, so we'd all line up shivering at the edge of the pool, Babylon Town Pool, 7 o'clock in the morning, and there'd be some old swim instructor, probably 17, because they had these teenagers, you know. And she just very meanly, in my recollection, I'm sure it's redacted, make us jump in the water. Anyway, didn't want to get in. Didn't want to get in that water. Well, this is the same pool in which I was baptized when I was 15 by a Presbyterian minister, but baptized by immersion. So I like all the connections to this water. So this is the water I'll have in. So this is the thing. We're at the Babylon Town Pool. This is grace, right? Why is it that we don't want to get in the water, right? I mean, the thing we want most, which is to participate in God, right? To know that everything God has is ours, is also that which we resist, right? Now, for a swimming pool, the answer's pretty easy, you know? You get in and you're cold. Water's cold. It hits you, you know? Well, grace isn't cold, but it'll take you out. Judgment's nothing compared to grace. Judgment makes sense. You know, I did this wrong, judge me, give me something to do to make it up. I like the idea of penance in the Roman Catholic Church. Gives me something I can do. It's grace that's a bear. Huh? What? I'm forgiven? Can't you just give me, you know, some stuff I can do to work it out? Make me feel better? I don't know. So getting in the water, what's the risk? We get in there and, you know, I like to swim, but I have trouble finding time to swim. I know, pull out a fiddle, right, in my life, you know, busy and all this. And my husband says, well, why don't you just go at lunchtime, go over to the gym, which is near my office, and swim, and then come back. And I say, because I have to redo my hair. I'm looking at the women. Yeah, okay. So, you know, it's just, I can't do that all in the morning, and then I have to do it all in the middle of the day. And he just rolls his eyes and says, well, I'm like, you don't understand. And that's the end of that conversation. But anyway, the point is, melted and molded, even swimming in a pool, some of us more than others, but we really are melted. You get in the water and you're wet, and your hair's wet, and your mascara is running. If you wear mascara, if you don't, I don't know. Fill in the blanks. But I'm speaking metaphorically. Something really changes when we get into that water of grace. We're surrounded. We're changed. We're immediately shaped. Right? There's a risk there. There's a risk that we are going to be different. That scares us. The great Danish theologian and philosopher Soren Kierkegaard, Lutheran, in the early 19th century, Kierkegaard talked about how it's hard to get into that water. It's hard to get in that water because it's a little bit scary to think about being changed. And it's also a little scary to contemplate that we really deserve to go in the water, you know. So if you look into that pool, and what you're seeing is the story of God emptying God's self and becoming the form of a servant in Jesus Christ and entering in and rising up out of the depths and being exalted so that every knee should bend in heaven and earth, every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. This is all from Philippians 2, I'm quoting. We look at that and we say, wow, you know, that's kind of intense. Do I really want to get in there? It'd be easier to get in there if we could just believe that God is sort of at a bit of a distance from us, you know? But to get down in there with Jesus and get into all of that, into that death, into that abyss, into that resurrection, it seems kind of uncomfortable. And Kierkegaard went on to say, even this isn't my fault, it's Kierkegaard's fault. So this man, by the way, is the person who coined the phrase leap of faith. It comes from Kierkegaard, just to give you a point of reference. Leap of faith. But what he didn't use the swimming pool analogy exactly, but what he's saying is it's hard to take the leap into faith, into the water, right? And start swimming around in grace. It's hard to take the leap of faith. And here's why he thought it was hard. He said this. He said, because when you really look at that water and you think about what it's about, you're scandalized. That's the word he used. You're offended. That's another word he used. Hear me out on this. This is Kierkegaard. He says, we're offended because we say, that just doesn't seem to be the kind of thing God should do. Right? Remember what I was saying? Born of the Virgin Mary? It's a little messy. Suffered under Pontius Pilate? What? God dying? And we're not even to descend it into hell. That offends me. Kierkegaard said, a lot of times people don't get into that pool, including us, because we still don't quite buy that's what God is like. We still kind of want to think of God as sort of beyond all that messiness, right? Beyond all of that entry into existence with us. We're offended. Remember that song by Eric Bazillion? It was sung by Joan Osborne about 15 years ago now. What if God were one of us? What if God were one of us? Just a stranger on a bus. God, we're one of us. Just a stranger. Joan of Arcadia. They used it. That's a TV show, right? I never saw it, but I heard they used it as the just a stranger, just a slob like one of us is the second line. What if God were one of us? Just a slob like one of us. Just a stranger on a bus trying to make his way home. Those were the lyrics. And then in the verse, it said something like, what if God weren't at such a distance we could just call God on the phone? And then it had something like, well, maybe the Pope somewhere in Rome can call God on the phone. Do you remember that? Well, that song was interesting because the singer was saying, I wish God weren't so distant from us. You know, I wish God were just right here with us. And then the show was about how God really is here with us. Well, I remember hearing the song and thinking, well, gee, this is what we believe. Somehow we're not getting the message out. The person who wrote the song is picturing God way, way far away. Okay? So one time I was quoting the lyrics, just a slob like one of us, maybe 15 years ago in a class like this. I hope this doesn't happen today. I don't think it will. But I quoted the lyrics and I said, just a slob like one of us. And a woman in the class got up. She was so offended that I quoted the lyrics and that someone called God a slob that she walked out of the class. And that's what Kierkegaard is talking about, because the woman just thought, this is going too far. God is not a slob. And I can see her point. I can't see walking out of the class, but I can see the point. God is not a slob. But hasn't God entered into our slobbiness with us in Jesus Christ? Isn't that our hope, right? When we're slobs, that God has entered even into that, has entered right into it with us, and claims us and loves us, descended into hell, into the abyss with us, in order to claim us, not to leave us there, not to just wallow around in it, but to lift us up out of it with him, right? Therefore, he's highly exalted. Resurrection, coming up out of that water. Well, Kierkegaard said, we think we're offended about what grace says about God, but actually, what really offends us is what grace says about us. You know what it says? It says we matter. We're valuable, we're precious, we're important, right? Think about that father in Luke 15. My son has returned, right? And then he goes in and basically is begging his elder son come on, come on in, right? You're beloved to me. It matters whether or not you're at that party. And that is what is most off-putting, Kierkegaard says. We might be able to handle God entering into slobbiness, but can we handle what it says about us? That God really knows our most slobberiness. I'm going to stop saying slobbiness, I promise. We got the point, right? But God knows everything about us, everything. And still says to us, everything I have is yours. And still says to us, as he said to Peter, on this rock I will build my church. You remember Peter, because Peter went from there to saying, all right then, I will never deny you. Ah, Peter, before the cock crows twice, you'll deny me three times. That's just how you are. Peter's like, subtext, well, why in the world would you choose me? Exactly. And Jesus, by the way, trying to get Peter to enter into the water, he's like, I know what I'll do. I'll set up a transfiguration. That'll get him. He'll enter in. He'll know everything I have is his. If I set this up and invite him, Peter says, I'll be over here building some shelters. That's us. I don't want to get into the transfiguration, into the water, because, you know, we don't deserve it. Exactly. There's a story about grits. I can tell as someone who's from New York who goes to North Carolina a lot, okay? So I'm if I can say Yankee, does that cause offense about myself, right? I've learned this word is touchy, but I don't quite get it being from New York. Anyway, a New Yorker goes into a diner in North Carolina and orders two eggs over light and wheat toast and one strip of bacon dry. And the order comes, and it's got all this white stuff that's oozing into the rest of the food. And so she calls the waitress over, and she says, ma'am, what's this on my plate? She says, oh, honey, those are grits. Well, ma'am, I didn't order grits. Oh, honey, grits comes whether you order them or not. Well, grace is like grits. It comes whether you order it or not, right? Whether you order or not, grace comes. It's not merited or unmerited or deserved or not deserved. How do you get in the water? So real quickly, because you knew this was going to happen. I'm over time. But there's a cost to get in. And you know what it is? It's we have to let go of these identities we have of being unworthy. Oh, it's okay. I won't get in that water. I'll just be over here in the corner sleeping. Come pray with me. Oh, no, we'll just be taking a nap over here. It's okay. We're not worthy. Come on. Come in. You gotta take the risk of letting go of that identity, right? And jumping in that water. Jump in that water. You hit the water. The water's cold. Your hair gets wet. Has to be redone. Whatever. Things begin to change. We're melted and molded. Right? And you come up out of that water to the promise, though, the promise of the sparkling. I mean, I'm in the Babylon Town pool, not a farm pond, right? That sparkling water. And then you got to swim. Believe it or not, I'm all the way through the chart. I made a quick move there. Could have talked longer about each one. But the thing is, you ever go in a pool, and this is maybe a kid thing, but I still have it a little bit, is I have to get up my nerve because I hate being cold, and I get in. Once you come up, there's always someone who hasn't gotten in yet. You don't want to be the last person to get in because you want to be able to sort of self-righteously say to the other person, you know what, it's really not as bad as you think it's going to be. Come on in, right? But Kierkegaard would say, yeah, it's easy for you to say once you've taken the leap of faith, right? Oh, come on, just try it. Come to church. But from the side of the pool, it's hard. It's hard to get in. It's hard to get in. But you come up out of the water, there's all this promise, right? You're in, you're already wet, it's done, right? You're not as cold as you think you're going to be. But then you actually have to swim if the water's over your head, or you start to sink. So that very last column is about practices, Christian practices. And I was going to try to spend a little time, but I knew we couldn't do all this in an hour, so I'm not quite that dumb. But just to touch on it is, how do we think, you know, I mean, the answer is always go to church, read your Bible, pray more, right? Spend time walking on the beach and looking at the sun. All those are answers. So how do we breathe life into thinking about those things so they don't become, or they stop being, things we do over here so we can get nearer to God who's over here? Because then you've dropped the ball on being in the pool. Does that make sense? On participation. So I'm just going to leave you with this this question or this idea, is that to read the Bible in order to get into the pool is one thing, but what is it? How does reading the Bible different when you're already in the pool, reading from there, or worshiping from the center of the pool, from the center of the household, knowing that everything God has is ours, right? From over here, you might be picking up the Bible and reading it as a kind of faux doors, right? All right, I'm going to read my Bible. I got to find the best bed and breakfast. I got to plan my itinerary. It's got to be my blueprint for life, right? Well, the Bible really isn't a blueprint. It's really not a faux doors. It's really not there to answer our questions in order to get us closer to God. If you're in the pool, right, you're already in the household. You're picking up the Bible as the book of the household, and you're there not so much to get answers to your questions anymore, but there to be formed by the questions the Bible asks us, right? The Bible isn't really there to answer our questions. It's there to question us. It's something God gives us to shape who we are. But see, that's a whole different way of reading the Bible than when we, and all of us have done it, hand out questions to a group when we're leading a Bible study, and we say, divide into groups of five and answer the questions on this page. I'll give you a little very practical suggestion, me with my abstract thinking, right? Very practical. Hand out blank sheets of paper and ask the group to read a passage and write down what questions the Bible is pushing with us, right? And then, see, you're reading it from in the water, right? Submitting. Wow, she even used that word, right? Submitting to the Spirit working through Scripture to shape us. And you can think similarly about worship and other Christian practices. What does it look like from inside the pool? Well, I better stop there, but this is just trying to get at grace. Oh, I have to say one more thing I forgot. It's really short. The contemporary English version of the Bible does not include the word grace, because they thought it's not understandable. They recognized, to their credit, grace is just such an odd idea, right? And what they were trying to do is make the Bible more accessible to more people. So if you look at the verse I have printed from Ephesians 2, for by grace we are saved through faith, and not of ourselves, not of works. It's a gift of God, lest anyone should boast. For we are Christ's workmanship, created in Jesus to do the good works which God prepared beforehand to be our way of life. I think I have it memorized in a different version. Yeah, those are key verses I've had in mind this whole time. The contemporary English version translates that as, for out of God's great kindness we are saved through faith. And it goes on to say something like, we have faith in God who, and I quote, treats us much better than we deserve. I don't like that translation. So what we're trying to say, in sum, God's grace isn't about kindness, our kindness times 10 million billion. It's completely other than anything we can accomplish, anything of this world. And it's not just that God treats us better than we deserve. God invites us to receive and participate and enjoy everything that is God's. I don't understand it, but I'm trying to understand, or I'm trying to know what it's about. So thanks for doing that with me for a little bit of time. And we said we'd end 10:15. Let's do 3 minutes for Q&A, and then I'll hang around as long as people want to after.
This is a question. It's just that what you're talking about, reading the Bible from the perspective of being in the water, as opposed to going to the Bible for answers. Mm-hmm. This isn't exactly the same thing, but I like to, when people ask me, why do you, you know, what's so special about the Bible? And by the way, it doesn't do any good to quote Bible verses to a non-believer. But, you know, the way I like to say it is, the way I look at the Bible is not to say something's true or these things are true because they're in the Bible. I look at it from a different perspective. I say, these things are in the Bible because they're true.
Yeah, that's nice.
And that struck me as what you're talking about being in the water.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And too often, unfortunately, Bible verses are pulled out of context and used to thwap people, you know. And so nuns understand them getting suspicious. I get suspicious, too, if you were to just come up and say, but, you know, this and this and that, with no context, I'd be worried you were... Bible as weapon is not a good model. That's not the use. Yeah. Yeah. Any other comments, questions you want to make? Yeah, yes.
Also, possibly there's a connection. Jumping into water, the old word where he says, now you have no excuse.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You better stick with it. You have no excuse. You're not.
Romans 1, are you thinking of?
Somewhere there.
Yeah.
Maybe that's possibly in the backs of our minds.
Yeah.
That's the cause for not jumping wholeheartedly or leap of faith in my rougher days. I ask God not to ask me to jump.
Oh, you know, I think I know what you're saying. I appreciate a chance. I think, I'm just going to tell you what I think. Why not? Because if you don't agree with me, you'll won't agree with me. But I believe God claims us before the foundation of the world, like it or not. Yeah, like it or not. So thank you for the chance to clarify. By in and out of the pool, I'm not talking about in and out of being saved. You know, you're not a Christian, you are a Christian. That's baloney. What I'm talking about is living in recognition of the fact, the objective fact of God's claim on us. I mean, for goodness sake, human love can be there, it can be steadfast, but until we acknowledge it, it can't change us, right? I mean, this is the stuff of great novels and great movies and great plays. Someone is in love with the beloved, right? And in the plays and movies that I like, the beloved, with the orchestra welling up, suddenly realizes after, you know, half the movie or three quarters of the movie or you're right to the end of the movie and the person cannot accept it, cannot know it, suddenly says, wait a minute, essentially, you love me. And then they say, but how can you love me? With a smile on their face, because they know they're loved anyway, right? How can you love me? Right? The orchestra swells. We sing it, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. Then we say, that saved a wretch like me. How can you love me? We sing it with a smile on our face. You know, knowing that we're loved changes us. The love is there. God's claimed us. That love is unconditional. It's unconditional. It's tenacious. But until we know it, we're not transformed. That's how I put together Presbyterian and Baptist. Right? But I am not. I don't think we decide whether we're in or out. That's the last thing God would leave up to me. I'm not leaving that up to my children. I love them no matter what. And unless I fail as a parent, I will always love them. I mean, it's possible for me to fail, not possible for God to fail. God's still waiting at that window for the prodigal to come home. That love is there. He is part of that household already, even when he's not present to the household. But everything changes when he makes the decision to come home and accept the fact that's the fact whether he comes home or not, that he's beloved. Does that make sense? My mom, I have a story of when I was a teenager, you know, I went through the distancing phase and yada, yada, and my strategy was to be very, very good, because I was already good, and I just was gooder. And then my parents couldn't yell at me for anything, so I got some distance, you know, so they'd, you know, I did all my chores, didn't kick my brothers, and which had been an issue for a while, but that's another story. And then the worst thing was I was very, very, very polite. How was school today? It was fine, thank you. And how was your day? Well, what did you do in school today? Well, I went to homeroom, and then I went to social studies, and I had band practice. My mom didn't care. My dad didn't care about hearing about my schedule. They wanted to know me, but they couldn't yell at me because technically I was being very polite. One night my mom, I was driving her crazy. She made this great dinner with all my favorite foods. I came down, I ate the dinner. I helped clear the table. I looked at her and I said, thank you, Mom, for doing that for me. And she lost it. You know, I exited the kitchen, stage left. She said, Cynthia Lynn Rigby, you get back here right now, young lady. I come back, she's crying. She says, don't you dare ever thank me for doing things for you. I am not doing things for you. Don't you realize that you're a part of me? She said. And I think, here we are, the good Christians we are. God has done things for us. We will do things for God, right? Elder son, I've done everything I'm supposed to do, and God is crying out like my mother did. That's not what I want. I don't just want this technical exchange, right? Don't you realize you're part of this household? I didn't come down there on that cross as a rescue operation. Well, maybe that's included in the package, I hope. But I came down there to be with you, to share life with you. That's what the cross is about. Really share life. Really and truly get in it, into it with you. See, my mom wanted me. I mean, her love for me was there whether I knew it or not. She wanted me to recognize that and get into the water. Yeah, changes everything. So that love that's unchanging, whether you get in the water or not, also is something different when you get in the water. And I don't know how to hold that all together, but I know both of those things are true. The love is steadfast, and it really matters that we respond. That's the Presby Baptist version. Methodist too. Maybe all of us, you know, trying to put it all together, right? Anyway, it's been a real privilege to be here in this community. Thank you very much for including me and for coming today. Thanks.